Now entering Nerdist.com.
This week's episode of the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast is sponsored by Liberator.com. Hey, have you checked out their website yet? Because I've raved about their sex pillows before. Liberator makes a wide variety of shapes that are designed for a variety of possibilities, including providing better access for missionary and anal sex, better lift for prolonged oral sex without sore necks, deeper penetration and G-spot stimulation, support for doggy, and beyond. I myself purchased a simple wedge pillow several years ago. Truly, it does change the game, especially when it comes to back support and comfort. I have too many good things to ponder about these products to talk about right now. But if you've got a second, maybe not at work, but check out Liberator.com. Thanks, guys, for sponsoring the show. All right, let's do this.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hey, sexy people. Okay, one class announcement and three bullet points, and then we get to this week's episode. Boning 101, I am teaching that in San Francisco this Monday, January 27th. Go to goodvibes.com or go to brownpapertickets.com and just type in Sex Nerd Sandra. Or if you're on FetLife, you can find the invite there. Spots are going fast, so if you did miss last time, grab your spot soon because it was packed last time. Okay, moving on. I have been meaning to thank you. Every day I'm thankful for the fact that you're sharing in this moment with me, that I get to do a show and talk to people about sexuality and go on adventures like I'm about to talk to about in this episode. And it's just, wow. I'm so thankful for you guys. And especially I'm so thankful for all the naughty monkeys who reach out to me to bring me to your schools and organizations. I appreciate that so much because you're not only supporting me, but you also want to physically bring me into your world like that. It's startling, and I just appreciate you so much for that. So, yay. Yay us. Look at us. Okay. Second, Valentine's Day. Okay. Look, we have four hump days left before Valentine's Day. That's four episodes, including this one. This is important because a lot of people have a lot of feelings about Valentine's Day. And I've been meditating on this a bit. I've come to the conclusion that for me, Valentine's Day seems to be a Rorschach inkblot test of our unique romantic philosophy and desires. Like, if someone's had a really negative experiences in Valentine's Day before, they bring that to the table. I love Valentine's Day as an opportunity to get extra time in with myself or with somebody I'm dating, just to eat something extra delicious or pamper ourselves a little bit more. To me, Valentine's Day is just a luscious day. Like, just do something stupid delicious, like, and you're good. But it would be shallow of me to just leave it at that. And truly, of course I have expectations, and I hear other people who have expectations around Valentine's Day. So I think about this, and I can't help but think about the five languages of love. They are words of affirmation, spending quality time, gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. Now, of course, expressing love and receiving love and attention. I mean, that spans all of those, but often people have their primary language of love that actually communicates. So thinking about it, sure, delicious food, an adventure perhaps, but at the core of a romantic relationship, for me, I need words. That's the closest I can get to reading my partner's mind and honestly knowing what's going on inside my partner and how they see me and how they see us and what they feel around what we're creating. That to me makes me feel so close to the person I'm with. So what works for you? What does Valentine's Day bring up for you? That's what I'm curious about. So I don't know, just a meditation on that red and pink holiday. All right. This episode It sounds like I'm about to sponsor the show. No, this episode's style is along the lines of the high school reunion episode and the Japan episode. So this is an adventure recap ep. All right, you guys. I adore my guest, Graham Ponente. I will have him back because I want to explore his brain some more and his experience. But right now, we need to talk about the stuff. All right, friends, let's do this.
Gordon Thunderfoot.
Hi.
He's very good at jumping.
Oh, Gordon, get down. She's a nice lady.
We have Hello. So much to talk about.
Yes, we do. It's like a oh, wow, that's really nice. Yeah, it's like a reverse cowgirl interview.
Are you ready to talk about what we're about to talk about?
Yeah, but your voice sounds so warm. I feel like you're a late night DJ on a jazz station.
Well, for the very beginning, sometimes I have a hard time getting into these things sometimes. So I just turn on my late night DJ voice, like, let's do this thing. Or my hyperactive child voice, like, oh, yeah, we're going to talk about the things, all the things. And all then somehow I find my balance within 10 minutes, hopefully.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with you asking me any sorts of questions.
All right. Okay. Graham Ponente, look, we've known each other for several years now. You've never been on the show. I've had my eye on you for a while. Are you ready to podcast with me?
I've been thinking about it, Sandra, and I feel like I'm ready to take this step with you.
Okay, let's do this. I don't really know what you do, but I know that you do it well, and that every time I run into you at all the like sex conferences or porn conventions or whatever it is, that, or just a friend's birthday party or a breakfast with lovely people, you are always a delight, and I'm still not sure what you do. What do you do?
I think that my job and your job are often very difficult to define and to describe to people, because I think at root level, we're both consummate freelancers. So our jobs may change depending on where we are. And in many ways, it sounds so superficial and ephemeral, but we are people whose job may change from day to day. So I am America's beloved porn journalist. And for years and years, I have written about the adult industry. And I never thought that I would get more than 6 months of writing out of it. But here it is 10 years in, and I find myself... You know, what started as writing about porn sets and interviewing porn actors and taking pictures of them has grown into covering the legal, technological, social aspects of the adult industry. And then, you know, in the past few years, where everybody seems to be professionally confessional, mm-hmm. I find myself at these sex conferences where, for some reason, I pass myself off as an expert.
Oh, right, because now are you doing panels and things and talking with microphones to other people about the things?
Quite often I do, and it's because I have a resonant, well-modulated and mellifluous voice that, you know, and I look people in the eye when I talk to them, so, and I have glasses, so people think I'm a pro.
Well, you fooled me.
I know!
You know, I always enjoy running into you. Actually, it was okay. So there is so much that we could talk about, but I need to process this specific experience that we've just had. And some of it we Venn diagrammed together. Like, we went out into the world and we conquered a little bit this past weekend. And it's the AVN convention. And that's what I've heard it called for years. What does AVN stand for?
AVN stands for Adult Video News, and it's one of those terms that if you are in the industry, you know what people are talking about. But I imagine the legion of fans that you have would probably have heard it described a different way. It's actually called the Adult Entertainment Expo, and it used to be primarily sponsored by Adult Video News, which is essentially the trade magazine of the porn industry. But what happens is there's an Adult Entertainment Expo, which, you know, goes on for a few days in Vegas at a hotel, and in this case it was the Hard Rock Hotel, and that is capped off with the Adult Video News Awards. So anybody in the business will say, oh, are you going to AVN? And they'll be talking about it in a collective way to include both the convention and the awards at the end of it.
Okay, wow, that was a good summary. Because I had to have you clarify early on what it is this was, because people have referred to it as AVN for years, and every year I go, oh no, I didn't go, or like, oh, I didn't think about it. And only in recent years, I'm like, oh, I can get press passes to things. I can go to things and talk to people and whatnot. And so I've moved over to Las Vegas just to on a little adventure. Like, I had no intention except to just see what there was to see. That was it. And I came back triumphant.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you became triumphant? Because whenever I see you, you always have this dazzling sunflower of a smile. And listeners, you should have seen what she just did. She just did a... She looked like the cutest Muppet you ever saw. But people go to this thing, and it is in ways a family reunion. You see all the people that you haven't seen all year because they come to Las Vegas, and because you live in Los Angeles perhaps, and the way you live your life when you're in Los Angeles is if somebody moves, you know, west or east of the 405, you have a going away party for them. And you might just as well not know them anymore if they move to a different neighborhood in LA, but you'll always see them in Las Vegas.
It's true. And I love conventions, but this was different for me because I don't know that many people in the porn industry, or I didn't think I did, because I'm adjacent and I talk more about couples and bedroom thingies. And so I don't really pay attention to porn things. I mean, like, I talk to porn stars mainly about sexual tips but I love socioeconomic, cultural, or I like the anthropology of it. I'm just not that involved in the business of it, or, you know, I'm just not up on the things. So I showed up feeling really kind of nervous and a bit afraid that I would just sort of walk around for 2 hours and then be like, okay, I'm done. Like, that's it. And what ended up happening was because I showed up on Friday afternoon and I had to leave Saturday afternoon. So I was there for 24 hours. So I get to AVN, and so later that day, I mean, it's like, I want to jump forward because I ran into you. And did I tell you what had happened just before I ran into you? And I was so excited to see you. Like, it's Graham. Everything's going to be okay.
I have that calming effect on people. Sometimes I provoke and incite them, but for the right people, I calm them right the hell down. Had you gone to a swingers rendezvous just before that?
Yes, yes, yes. Because, okay, I parked my car. I parked my ass. I don't know why I'm talking like that. I parked my car. I register. It smells like cigarette smoke, which is a major downside of the Vegas situation. But the Hard Rock Hotel is like, I mean, talk about an education in what to wear if you're really into rock and roll. Like, there's all the shops and like everyone's just real rock and rolled out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And occasionally, sometimes I go to Vegas maybe 3 or 4 times a year. And so the other times I go, it's not porny. And we can talk about how the Hard Rock had completely given itself over to this awards show and this convention because everybody was porned out. But you go there at a different time of year and it's only the hookers who look like porn girls, but you do see the children of well-meaning like rocker parents who are trying to raise their children in the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And the kids look like they've been mainlining heroin.
Oh no. That's really amazing.
Yeah, not exactly pleasant, but you know, you do see the acculturation going on, which you know, anthropologically, since you're an anthropologist, you'd find fascinating.
Right. An amateur philosopher first, an anthropologist second, and an all around a dork third, I would say is my three. I'm a triple threat.
I would I never got the impression that you were a dork.
Oh. Well, maybe it's just a holdover from high school. Dork as a verb more than a noun.
As in, let's go dork?
As in, no one's going to like look at me and go, oh, that person is a dork. But the minute I start talking, they're like, you're really dorky. You know, like it's more of that.
Oh, an adjective.
Oh, right. Okay, an adjective. Okay, yes. Well, I had never really thought about it before. But yes, as an adjective. But then I think about it as the verb, what I was doing. Anyway, this is not about that. AVN, let's get back on track here. So when we ran into each other, I had just come from, I'd ran into my friend Alan, who's been on the show before talking about First Amendment rights and the porn condom laws and things.
Oh, Alan Gilbard.
Yes.
The fantastic First Amendment lawyer with the first line of the First Amendment tattooed on his person.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if there are people that I'm huge, that I am a huge fan of, and Alan Gilbard, First Amendment attorney, is one of them. Not only is he a consummate burner, but he on his right shoulder, I believe, has the First Amendment tattooed on it. And it's not a henna tattoo. It's it's a real tattoo.
God, that, I had no idea. No, he's amazing, and he was the first line of defense against me having a total, like, I don't know anybody here, and everybody's really, I don't know about you. I mean, you seem suave in every circumstance. He just nods his head slightly. But I have a certain amount of anxiety. So I immediately went to the toy area, and Alan was there, and he completely just went around with me, and I just was looking at all the toys and learned a bunch of stuff about stuff that I hadn't really seen, and saw chocolate penises, which really lit up my world. Like, I didn't know how much a three-dimensional chocolate dildo could really just in 72% cacao.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow. I empty my backpack at the end of every day, and I take out all the cards from porn stars and strippers, and I don't know if your microphone is picking this up, but this entire interview, my dog has just been giving me a tongue bath because I just got back from AVN from Vegas yesterday, and he's licking all the dirty ashtray, melon scented stripper pole body spray off of me. So you might be able to pick that up. But anyway, yeah, some of the things that I unloaded from my backpack were this little mesh bag of chocolate penises that had all congealed.
Oh no.
Well, so I'm, you know, you seem like a person who is on a constant voyage of personal discovery, and yet I saw those chocolate penises, and they didn't give me the thrill that they gave you.
It was, I think, because most of the chocolate penises I've seen are low quality chocolate, and are often flat on one side. Like they'll just be sitting in a package like, here is a penis for you. So glad you're getting married. But this one was just like, hey, you could have sex with this if you want, but maybe you should just eat it, you know?
Oh my gosh. I guess I didn't see those. So they
were huge.
I'm thinking of the bunnies that you get at Easter that are flat on one side. So yeah, I agree. So did they have chocolate veins?
They did. They were veiny and stuff. It was all a thing. It was very Doc Johnson.
Wow, it's very Willy Wonka. The penises have veins in them. You can suck them and suck them.
So, Alan tells me that, you know, there's a swinger conference.
Hold on a second. Raus Gordon. My dog just tried to, there you go. Schlafen Zimmer. Yeah, you had, my dog really wants a piece of us.
Did you just talk to your dog in German?
Yes.
And he understood?
Yes.
Are you German?
I am taking a German class.
Oh my God, I'm so keeping that in the show. Oh, okay. So Alan takes me across the street to a swinger convention because he's like, you know, there's one across. I'm like, you need to take me. Like, I demand him to take me to the swinger convention. So we leave AVN within me being there for an hour. Like, just straight out. This is the first time I've really infiltrated their natural habitat.
I have seen them at work and play in my own Marlon Perkins sort of style. I see the expression on your face. I'm a few years older than you. Marlon Perkins used to host this show called National Geographic, mm-hmm. and Mutual of Omaha's National Geographic. Mm-hmm. So he was a guy who would go into the savannah and he would watch, you know, gazelles being torn apart by cheetahs, and you would hear him narrating it, and it would have been funny to hear Marlon Perkins going into a swingers convention.
Then you'd enjoy this, that recently I was at a lighthearted sex party. And one of the girls...
May I interrupt? It's really important. That's a really important distinction because there's a term that I've been playing with lately called sex educator serious. And you know how people say, oh, I'm serious as a heart attack, or I'm serious as a car wreck. And I'll say, I'm serious as a sex educator, because you have to make the distinction that some sex parties are lighthearted, because you'd think These have to be, you know, when I first started working at AVN 10 years ago, I thought, this is going to be the happiest place on earth. And everybody was so dour and pointy face. And then you think, oh, people who are sex educators for a living, they must be so much fun. But then, you know, you'll walk into one of those places like the buffalo herd that you are, and you'll say, hey, everybody. And they're like, crickets, tumbleweeds.
They're so angry.
Yeah, they're very angry. So I'm glad you went to a sex party that reflected your sunflower nature.
Yes. And I say lighthearted, it was also that, I mean, it wasn't like everyone was like really trying to get laid. It was a lot of people were just chilling out. And one of our friends, like this couple, they were kind of going at it in the corner, and she was wearing a panda hoodie. You know, because we, you know, just like all the spirit hoods, like, you know, you have all the spirit hoods at the thing, and someone just happens to be wearing that one, and we start narrating it like it's a National Geographic.
I've never heard the term spirit hood before.
Oh, it's a company. I think they may have been the first ones that did the furry hood with the ears that come down in long straps to little mittens. They're so cute.
Yeah, those are adorable.
Yeah, I've got a wolf one. It's pretty sweet. Spirit hoods are great. Let me cut to the chase here, buddy. I get into the swinger area. They're all gathered for a seminar. I say hi, and they're like, stay, we're having a squirting 201 class. And it's so interesting to watch swingers in their coupledom and the way they, what they wear and their behavior and how they interact. And it just, in a group all together, there's this, like, they're all very groomed. And like, they're all, there's this, like, like a high level of just paying attention to hair and like and beard lines, and there's just this polish to swingers that it just, and like the entire room was like that, and I kept looking around like, these people are like just so good at like the details.
Oh, so they were presenting themselves really well.
Yes, it just, and I get it. I understand why, but it's just not common to see that, even in Los Angeles, to see such a high level of detailed grooming.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, the way I experience swingers when I have is that there's often never a middle ground. They're either in full peacock mode, and we can talk about the way they smelled as well.
Oh.
Or they are in complete, hey, you know, everything's groovy, kind of Oxford shirt and no pants and suppressing your own vomit mode.
Oh, I haven't experienced that one. I can't wait. I cannot wait. But it was interesting because the class that I ended up, I mean, it's funny that I show up at AVN and I end up at a squirting class, like really, of all things. But the guy who was doing it is talking about how he has there hasn't been a single woman that he hasn't been able to make squirt, that, and which to me is like, okay, you know, maybe there's something he knows that I don't know. And I'm learning this technique that's, you stick your hand, like your finger inside the person, you like get real crazy, like really fast movements, and it'll make the person squirt. But the thing that you need to purchase to really learn to do this is this watch that you wear that, turns from red to yellow to green, and green means that you're moving at the right speed of in and out in order to do this squirting magic.
Yeah, I've seen that, and if any of you play guitar, it is very much like forming an A chord, the way you move your fingers to get anybody to squirt. And this to further extend the guitar metaphor, this device is like an electronic tuner, where, you know, you're adjusting and fiddling, and then it turns green when you've got just the right vibration.
I have an additional metaphor.
I've never met a four I didn't like.
Because it was, to me, just witnessing it over and over again, because there were also live demonstrations going on, and a lot of hooting and hollering, and there's a lot going on in that room. But it was a speed thing, and so it kept feeling like we were in some sort of parody of Back to the Future, and the watch was the flux capacitor, and we just kept trying to get up to 88 miles per hour. And it was just, and because he would go so fast, it was just, and there would be this like squishing sound going on. It was like the whole thing was kind of, whoa. But they gave me a watch, so I'm totally going to try it.
Do you have somebody in mind to try it on?
Absolutely not. I mean, I guess some people come to mind. I will be around some people soon, but like, I don't know if I have the forearm strength, like the bicep strength, to go that fast. But at the same time, I think it's a little bossy. And the guy who said he'd never not made a woman squirt ended up not making his first volunteer squirt. That was a little awkward.
Yeah, it's that the commoditization and the sportiness of that sort of crowd is sometimes off-putting. It often reminds me of the pickup artist community, where someone guarantees a result in a way that seems kind of unloving and kind of cold.
Yeah, it's funny because there was so much good takeaway, and yet it got more and more shallow and kind of like it lost its humanity as it went along. Like it just became less about pleasure and more about, yeah, seeing results. And so it was a really odd, it was an odd experience. But also I was like so excited to just be with them that I just wanted to kind of accept them as they were. But it did become a bit of a sales pitch. But all I know is I got a free watch because I was pretty excited about the whole thing. And the guy like saw me being excited and he gave me a watch and I was like, thank you so much. So I do appreciate that. And then I ran into you and so much happened. We had an experience together and you were so wonderful to invite me out that night to something magical. Of your experiences at AVN, what would you rate that experience, that night out, versus the rest of your AVN experience?
I'm like St. Francis of Assisi here because all my animals are coming up to say hello. As Frampton, my cat. Would you like me to rate this experience without the context of the experience?
We're going to talk about the experience. I had a really, 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 really great time. And that's coming from someone who doesn't party
professionally.
Well, I try and have a great time no matter where I am. I can be at the library and be having a great time.
I know that about you. That's why you're such a national treasure. I know that about you.
Well, thank you. I mean, I feel the same. I feel like we could, you know, go on many adventures together and it would be okay no matter if we ended up at something really weird like a squirting part thing. Anyway,
I will answer your question then.
Okay.
I would say that was an unqualified 9.
Okay. So it wasn't just me that was an amazing experience that we had. Just a remarkably... I'm still glowing from how great a time I had that night.
Yeah. The only reason that it wasn't a 10 for me was because we had to leave.
Ah. Oh, it was smart, though. It was like, 3 a.m. or something, you know?
Yes. So the reason that I loved what we did, and may I talk about?
Yeah. Break it down.
Okay. So the great thing about, you know, AVN week is that you meet not only a lot of people who are in your own business or, you know, as you say, the adjacent businesses, but you meet a lot of people who just like porn. There's a cachet about hanging around the adult industry. And there was a... There's a guy named Jack the Zipper, who is an amazing pornographer, an amazing artist who is able to translate his vision into porn in a way that is not distractingly arty. And he's a rock star artist pornographer. And I encourage all of your readers and listeners to check this guy out. If you don't like porn, he might give you an idea of how this form can be realized in a really cool way. So anyway, I meet Jack the Zipper at, you know, 3 a.m. somewhere in the Hard Rock, and we have a wonderful conversation for a while, and he says, "Hey, a friend of mine is a chef, and he throws this party every year, and I'm allowed to invite some people. What are you doing tomorrow night?" And I had some plans, but I thought already there's so much mystery involved in this that I'm gonna go, because there's a lot of people I know, there's a lot of people I don't know, and I love meeting people I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I love having experiences where, you know, I'm not completely prepared. So already I'm intrigued. And I say, "Yeah, I'm going to go, Jack the Zipper. I'm going to go to this party that, you know, your celebrity chef friend is throwing." And he wouldn't tell me the name of the celebrity chef friend. And it's fine because I only know who Julia Child and like Emeril Lagasse are. I don't know any of those other people. Because you see the way I live. Anyway, so I said, "Yeah, I'm going to go." And, you know, a little bit later on, he texts me and he says, "Can you bring around some ladies?" And I said,
"Oh, is that? Oh, I didn't realize I was one of the ladies."
Well, at first he said friends. Mm-hmm. And you would have made that cut anyway. And, you know, the hallway we saw each other in, 10,000 people in it. I would have asked you whether regardless of whether you were, you know, a lady or a dude. Anyway, I just thought you'd enjoy it. So first he says, first when we were talking, he said, you can bring some friends. When he texted me, he said, bring some ladies. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay. And so I thought of three people who I'd really like to have dinner with, for various reasons, and also with a mind to the fact that there were going to be some other people there. Who do I know who can have a conversation with anybody? And, you know, we have these people in our lives where we say, aha, that person I could bring anywhere, and it doesn't matter the group that I drop this person into. That person's going to be able to talk to anybody. So I made my selections based on that, because it would be a bunch of people we didn't know. So anyway, the three invitations having been given out, we take a cab from the Hard Rock to the Cosmopolitan, which is, you know, a fairly newish and really quite beautiful.
Strikingly beautiful.
Building.
Couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it was glorious. It was glorious. And, you know, it's all the wonderful things about the Southwest that is a place of constant expansion. Like in Vegas, you don't go anywhere without seeing construction equipment, and there's all this space. So we go to the Cosmopolitan. I'd never been there before. That was fun. You had never been there before. And we finally gather around a bar where we see some people that we know that we didn't know were going to be there.
That you know. You're the only person in this entire group that I know.
Oh, okay. So I saw my former editor at Fleshbot, Lux Alptrom, and I saw, you know, the delightful Justine Jolie, fetish model and raconteur extraordinaire. And then Jack the Zipper shows up, and we're there with Cherry Ferretti, who's a bespectacled porn star, and my friend Monica from the Stock Room. And then this guy who's, you know, this guy, bald, you know, kind of commanding looking, with a lollipop in his mouth, in the way, you know, there's that kind of affectation that people who are just kind of daring you to call them infantile will have a lollipop in their mouth. I don't know what it is, but this guy could rock the lollipop. Chris Santos, celebrity chef, a perfectly nice guy and like an expansive, humble, down to earth, for despite the fact that he's on TV and he owns a bunch of restaurants, he takes us out. We, you know, and there is a point, and I don't know if you experience this as well, I was sold this evening as this chef is going to make us dinner. And so that's what I told you. And there was a point where I thought, oh shit, not only is he not going to make us dinner, but we're going out to dinner and we're going to have to pay for it. And oh. I hadn't planned to pay for an expensive dinner just then. We pile into an obscene limousine.
Describe this limousine.
So there, not only do we have to describe the limousine, but we have to describe the other people in the party. There was us representing the AVN hotel. And then there were a bunch of, I would describe them as supermodels, wouldn't you? New Yorkie supermodels.
There were definitely a couple supermodels. There was a heavy metal rocker dude, slash entrepreneur there in a black suit, great neck tattoos. His friend who's a director, like, so there was a director and a magician and a musician, Justine, who's officially the most beautiful woman I've ever seen, and Chris, his girlfriend Cynthia, and Jisley was there.
Oh yes, Jisley was there. Who, if we were fortune cookies, her fortune cookie would say, "You bring light to any gathering."
Yeah, I love Jizz. Jizz is great. They're quite a delight. And every time I see them, I'm like, yeah, you're pretty great and quiet. I love the shy ones. Anyway, we're walking to valet, and it's just this long line of people who, like, we're all enjoying each other's company, and it's like kind of magical because we all don't really match, but we do match somehow. Like, we're all game for this adventure, and we're walking into valet, and we're walking toward this Hummer limo, and I'm like, are we like gonna get a bunch of cabs, or what's going on? Why are we're walking past Philip. Wait, what are we? We're not going to the Hummer limo. Oh my god, we're going to the Hummer limo. Oh, we're going into a Hummer limo. Like, it's just was this series of like, oh, that this is my night. Okay,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and we get into this Hummer limo, and you know, everybody except you, I guess, and Jizz Lee have difficulty getting into it because, you know, it's difficult getting into a limo with the impossibly high heels that you are wearing when you are a supermodel. So, but we all crawl into it like it's a very expensive blanket fort. And then there's lights inside. It's like a little tiny disco inside, foreshadowing what would happen later. And then we wind up at the Mandalay, at a sushi restaurant that I think had just been opened for our party.
Yeah, the sushi restaurant was, I mean, and to say sushi restaurant, like, I think like a sushi bar and some table. I mean, it's like a glorious cherry blossom wallpaper lined circular amphitheater feeling, you know, warm, dim light room with a long 40-person table with like candlelights, and I'm just like, oh, okay, well, okay then, okay. there's nothing going on in my brain at this point, just like, all right. And it's 10 o'clock. Like, I didn't even think it was really gonna be dinner. I thought it was gonna be like some snacks that are fancy on crackers, like with some chef. Like, I had no idea, like, that I was pretty excited, man. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and the meal was curated for us, so things kept showing up, having been specially selected for us. And there were about 25 people around this table, and we just had wonderful conversation. It was like the best Thanksgiving dinner you could think of, except it was Japanese food.
It really was. And sitting to my right was Ryan McClain, who I met, he's a male porn actor who is just a delightful conversation and just such a sweetheart. And I was like, I've never really just had a nice, I think James Dean is the only porn actor that's male that I've really sat down with like previously. And it was kind of just like a 30-minute like quick interview in his car. So it wasn't really enough to really like get settled in, but like, it was just nice. And for me to realize that I've never really spent time with a person who does this, and he was just so just great. So everybody at the table was fantastic. Did I end up showing you the sushi roll with the stuff inside?
I don't think so.
So the Pop Rocks, no?
Oh, yes. We had a sushi roll with Pop Rocks in it.
Yeah. Like, you eat it, and it's like, spicy tuna. Oh, is that salmon? Yes, it is. Avocado. Whoa, it's crackling in my mouth.
Yeah. It was a night of those things. And I just want to say, though, I've directed two porn movies. One of them, Ryan McClain was in. If you find my version of The Facts of Life, XXX, he was in it.
Awesome. The next day I Googled him, or like I added him on Twitter, and I'm like, oh, you have such abs under there. Like, I had no idea. Like, you know, I'm like, you're nice. And like, oh, I see.
Yeah. It's a weird sort of, lifestyle whereby, you know, most of the people that you're hobnobbing with, they get up to some amazing things during the day.
Right. And amazing beauty standards.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the misconceptions about the porn industry, because so many people, the stereotype exists still or persists still from the 1970s, is that, you know, people kind of don't take care of themselves. But, you know, today's porn star really does.
Okay. I intended this to be like a half an hour thing. I realized there was a lot I'm still processing about this. Can we keep talking for another 15?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, because I know that you need to go and there's something at one.
Yes.
Okay, speaking of beauty standards, I expected Avian to be a sad look at people who do porn having fake smiles on their face and then the people who are kind of weird lining up to touch them inappropriately while they sign stuff. Like, because I had seen that once before and I just felt weird about it. And Avian was actually delightful, like absolutely delightful. I mean, there is like a certain amount of like, wow, I'm going to have to stand here for 2 hours and like be nice to everybody and sign things. Like there's, but that's going to be in any convention, like Comic-Con or whatever it is. But I kept getting looked at, and like, because you'd stand, let's say at the side of a hallway and just every, and it's just like this stream of mostly men walking by and every single one of them would glance at me. Like every single one of them. And I know, I get the game, like they're looking for somebody that looks familiar, that they're a fan of. And female in the corner of your eye might be her. Nope. Nope. So I got that they were just on the hunt. But for me, I started to feel like unsafe or like uncomfortable with people thinking that I'm a porn actor. Like, oh no, I'm a sex educator. I'm not a porn actor. Like realizing that there was some sort of safety or that I had some kind of negative idea of what it means to be in porn and that I didn't want people seeing me like that. And it really like struck me as something that like, wow, what is that? Like I had all these kind of stereotypes and negative associations that were coming up for me at AVN. And I was also recognizing that and like calling myself out on it, but I was just feeling really hunted and weird there.
Yeah, I think that might be an aspect of Vegas, or it might be a circumstance of the really insular nature of that complex, the Hard Rock complex, where there was nothing else going on. You know, even on the elevators, you saw porn stars' images branded, you know, as the doors would open. And everything, there was nothing that would ever suggest that the Hard Rock Hotel was not the porn hotel. And I often wonder what it's like to just be any woman in a situation like that.
It felt weird. It's so funny. I was going to pair this podcast with the mindfulness recording. I interviewed a sociologist. She does work with people on being more mindful of their emotions because so much feeling and just little triggers of mine came up while I was there. So like the whole personal discovery thing, like it really was discovering aspects of myself while being there. And my, you know, and baller status stuff like coming up at that dinner, like how do I feel about this? This is interesting. What's the dynamic amongst the people here? Like who's got power? Who doesn't have power? Who's, you know, what's going on? Like everyone's delightful. This is crazy. Like what are my preconceived notions of what people do at these kinds of dinners? Like, you know, I have a question for you because you've spent so much time in this industry. Because a few times I talked to women who are performers and they'd say, oh, well, I mean, I do girl. I only do girl. And there was this unsaid thing like, oh, I don't do all of that, just girl. Like as if there was something bad or less than, or like they were somehow better because they were doing just girl. And I just got this inflection. It was just a slight thing. I didn't know what I was picking up on exactly. Do you have an idea about that?
Yeah, I feel like there's a necessity to make a distinction between yourself and the negative perceptions around other things within the same industry. And I'd go farther than that. You know, some exotic dancers or strippers will say, I dance, I don't do porn. Or porn stars will say, well, I don't escort. Pornographers will say, yeah, I do couples films. I don't do that sort of max hardcore speculum inserting stuff. And I think there's a real need to delineate yourself between, you know, various aspects of the porn industry. And I see it happen with the women as well. Well, they'll say, you know, I just do solo masturbation. I don't do any kind of penetration with, you know, carbon based things. Mm-hmm. And I wish that sort of thing would stop, because you know what? The general public sees you all as being squeezed out of the same tube, and there is nothing wrong with what anybody's doing.
That's really gross, man. Squeezed out of the same tube. But I appreciate all metaphors. But that one was specifically like, whoa.
Maybe I should start like a cafe press store. And in addition to your sex nerd or your sex geek t-shirt, you could have one that says, I appreciate all metaphors.
Oh, that's good. I like that bumper sticker. I'll tattoo it on my shoulder, just like Alan's. Although Reed makes the sex geek shirt, I have a incognito, just the face of my logo on my shirt.
Oh, okay. All right. I think I've seen you rocking that particular shirt, but you know, as a person who wears t-shirts, you would look good in that one too.
I appreciate all metaphors. And then right on the back, and on the lower part, just dot, 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 in bed. Any other thoughts or anything surprising you saw this year at AVN, or anything you learned, or masterful wisdom that you can pass on?
I have been going to this convention for 11 years now. And when I first started in the business, I knew nothing about porn stars or porn actors. I had written this article way back in 2002 about how, if the Valley, the San Fernando Valley, actually seceded from Los Angeles, there was a referendum at that point that might have resulted in the Valley becoming its own independent city. I wrote about porn for the very first time then. And then when I got a job at AVN, it was based on the success of that particular series of articles. And I didn't know anything about porn. And so I've been going to this for 11 years. And from the very beginning, people would say to me, oh, it's not like it was. You know, porn for many years used to be a license to make money. And now you actually have to be skilled at something in order to make money to do it. But for many, many years, if you were ready to trade your legitimate job and the ability to talk to your family and all that stuff for the scads of money and really decadent lifestyle that porn allows you, if you decide to jump in that way, you could make a lot of cash. You didn't have to know how to really hold a camera very well. You didn't really need to know how to edit very well. All you do is you would hook up with your friends, and you would press the button on a camera, and you would make a lot of money. So 2002, I had a lot of depressing conversations with 50-year-old guys who remembered it the way it had been. And now the internet and lagging DVD sales and piracy have made it a much more difficult game to make cash in. And so every single year I would hear, AVN isn't as big as it was last year. It won't be here next year. And over the past 3 years, I have found that there has been a real separation between the people who complain and the people who are taking this as an opportunity. And so this year, for the first time, like an alcoholic might say, I think the industry hit bottom. And this year, people are really rebuilding. I talked to so many businesses who were signing orders and fulfilling orders at this show. And I think a lot of the people who are in the porn industry who for the past 5 or 6 years have been dealing with the mainstream media catching on to the fact that the porn industry is dying, they have finally rebounded in such a way that there's a lot of fresh innovation going on in the business. So you know, you caught this convention at probably its smallest, self-contained in one of the smallest hotel and convention centers in Las Vegas, the Hard Rock. It used to be at the Sands and take up three different rooms, and you know, Harrah's and the Palazzo and the Venetian, all of those, and the Wynn, all of those connected hotels would be somehow involved. And now it has contracted to this, and you found it to be delightful, and I found it delightful as well. And I thought it was a really interesting year.
Yeah, I think a few years ago I went to something in LA, like Erotica LA or something, and it was, and there was this kind of awful sleaze to it, the women did seem like actively unhappy, like there was an unhappiness, like like there is like a bland, like frozen smile thing that you kind of have to put on for like all the stuff. I get it. But there was like an undercurrent of just, I was picking up on this really like bad vibe. And then, I don't know, like there was just, I felt like the performers were, had a lot more control over their lives and just had, or had a lot of, I don't know, we're just having fun. Like just, they just seemed to be like, yay, we're here. Yay. Like, I don't know. It just, there was a certain amount of joy I was picking up on that really fed me.
Yeah, I think the difference between this particular show and Erotica LA and AdultCon and any of the adult conventions that go on across the country is that this one has been around the longest. This January is always the time for AVN. You know, historically, it's in the DNA of the adult industry that January means AVN, and it really is the prom for a lot of people. So whereas what you saw was girls being trotted out and really trying to make $5 on an autograph picture and hawking their wares and under the harsh light, it's, and essentially them against the world, what AVN is most of the time there is a buffer between the oppression of the fans and the performers themselves. Whereas at this week's show, they really get a chance to shine and to be universally loved and accepted. There's, you know, plenty of bodyguards around to make sure that people don't get grabby.
Yeah. Yeah, they held me back really well. It was good.
but I do understand that when you see people appraising you all the time, that must collectively feel kind of odd. You know, I'm pretty much oblivious most of the time, so I don't, and I'm a guy, and you know, I'm not wearing a thong, so I don't have that sense that I'm constantly being appraised.
Yeah. I mean, I already kind of knew the score too. It's like, I'm not dressed up. Like I did not do my hair or makeup for this. Like clearly I'm behind the camera on this one, guys. Like, don't even worry about it. But it was startling. I was just startled. It was, I don't know. Anyway. But yeah, thank you so much for inviting me out and contributing to an amazing 24 hours in Vegas.
Absolutely. You made the event better with your presence.
Aw. Oh, where can people find you in the world?
Oh, yes. So my name is Graham Ponante, and you can find me at grahamponante.com. And I'm also the editor of The Naked Truth, which is which is the editorial arm of GameLink.com, which is the world's largest DVD and adult VOD e-tailer. And so if any of the things that we talked about today, any of the people we talked about today, strike your fancy, you can find all their movies on GameLink, and then you click over to The Naked Truth within GameLink.com, and you can find a lot of coverage of adult industry news. And we do it intelligently and with love and fairness and with an eye to this industry needing to exist for the betterment of a lot of people.
Excellent. Thank you, Graham.
Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you, you guys, for listening. Go Team Fun.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.